It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared again here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here in the Stancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU default studios of Freedoms of the Nash, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, you know who does that really good? I had Keith Knight, you know, Don't Tread on Anyone. I said, come on, give me a .com, man. And he goes, oh, .com. It was amazing. I'm like, holy crap. So the next time you have him on, have him do it for you, man. It was awesome. Okay, what we're going to do, we're talking. Yes. Okay, so what we're doing is talking to James Corbett. We try and get with him as often as possible. On Wednesdays, we try and get him on. Davi's in over here working. He's just going to, you know, keep going. And then one of the things that a lot of the stuff, it's been a little bit since we've talked, but I wanted to talk about several things here. Who we got? Did Russia just undergo a regime change? That was interesting. You saw the entire government resign and redo, and Putin's going to be in charge forever for something. You know, he becomes prime minister. I think he did this before, too. He's back and forth. So anyway, it's going to be Putin forever. And then we have Rock the Vote. I haven't watched that, so I want to know what that's about. Larkin and Amanda Rose was on your show for a while. I, you know, talked to them quite a bit, so I doubt I would have got something new. I didn't watch it, but I'd like to hear how that went. Behind the Paywall, questions for Corbett on how that's of interest to us as we're doing a whole bunch of different things for our trip that we're starting in May. This afternoon, I had Kingsley Edwards on from Float talking to them about I need to pick a social media for what we're doing. And if you guys can do this and this and a couple of that, man, we're in. We'd be pimping the crap out of you, and we'll do that. So we'll talk about some social medias. But the one thing that I wanted to start off with was the third annual Real Fake News Awards. Okay, I really enjoy those when you do that. And so let's talk about those. Go ahead and, you know, tell the audience about the Fake News Award and the winners this year.
Well, for people who don't know, every single year I do a annual Fake News Awards edition of my podcast. And actually, this stems from, you remember, just when Trump got into office, and was it 2017? It must have been 2018, I think. His administration, or the GOP, or whatever it was, did like a fake news awards where they said they were going to announce like the biggest fake news stories of the year. And of course, it was all from that left-right nonsense divide, and it's all about how the press lies about Trump. But I thought, hey, a fake news awards, that's actually a good idea. I should do that. So for the last 3 years, every year in January, I've been doing it. And I always ask my audience, you know, what do you think of the biggest fake news stories of the last year? And I get lots of ideas. I have some ideas of my own. I throw them together and create some ridiculous award categories, and we're away to the races. So this year, what were the winners? Well, hold on, let me bring up the list so I'm not going off the top of my head. The award for fakest narrative about a contextless internet video goes to CNN, Washington Post, and NBC Universal for their coverage of the Covington High School protest thing. Remember that? Or the whatever that was.
Yeah, the kid with a MAGA hat standing there in Washington as they had the Native American banging the drum thing.
Protester, and they were being so violent and rude and aggressive. And then when it comes out, no, absolutely the other way around. There was the black Israelites that were making fun of these kids, and then the Native American guy went over to them and started getting in their face, and they literally just stood there, didn't do a thing. Anyway, it was all fake. And the upshot is CNN, Washington Post, and NBC Universal are being sued. Actually, CNN just settled their suit with Nick Sandman, the Ed Covington kid. Combined total of $800 million he was suing them for. I mean, I don't think he's going to get $800 million.
Yeah, what was it? Do you know? I think the settlement was undisclosed or something, but it was, I'm sure it was a chunk.
I don't think they disclosed it, but who knows?
Yeah.
It may not even have been monetary. I mean, we don't know, but that's the thing.
They said they were really, 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 really sorry.
Yeah, we won't do it again to you specifically, maybe. The award for fakest false flag cover-up of the year goes to CBS News for an article they did in the wake of this OPCW whistleblower scandal. Your audience knows about this, right?
OPC, you talking about the Syrian gas?
Yeah, exactly. The Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, which was the esteemed investigatory body that was sent into Syria in the wake of the Duma alleged sarin attack. Originally, they were saying it was sarin, but then they kind of changed it to chlorine when they couldn't find any sarin. Anyway, the chemical weapons attack that took place in Duma, on the outskirts of Damascus in Syria in 2018, April 2018. So they sent the OPCW in to investigate it, and they came back eventually with their final report, which was released last year, that said, we found chlorinated agents and signs of, you know, chlorine having effects on people there. So there was clearly some sort of chlorine-based chemical weapon that was dropped on these poor civilians by the evil Assad government slash the Russians. And as I've been pointing out since this took place and with the report and so on and on, there's a million different points of dispute there, but it has started to emerge over the last several months. There have been key whistleblowers inside the OPCW saying, actually, there was this engineering report that was issued by a separate team that showed that this wasn't true. And then there was another whistleblower that was talking about the U.S., the Americans, officials who weren't disclosed what their title was or what, you know, exactly what they were. They were just American government officials who showed up at the OPCW and said, you're not going to report on this. You're going to come back with the...
Yeah, that was my question. I know what they did. I know what they're accused and what the whistleblower says is all BS and everything, but I'm wondering why. You know, who was it that pushed the button that furthered this net? What? So it's...
We have at least one testimony that there were American government officials.
Men in black.
The report was changed as a result of that, because, of course, this was all part of the swirling of the white helmets slash the propaganda narrative that's been spread around about Syria in general since the start of this war. This was part of the American slash Israeli push in Syria to dethrone Assad, and it was important for them to have this. At the very least, actually, the damage had already been done, and the Syria strikes around two had already been launched as a result of this. So the report, you know, if they came back a year later and said, oops, maybe it wasn't a chemical weapons attack, it would just be a black eye. So you wonder why they would go to the wall on this one. But at any rate, I guess they just didn't want that black eye. So they're like, no, you're going to say it was a chemical weapons attack. And they did. And CBS News responded to all of this by, you got to read this article, because it's 23 paragraphs long. You think it would go into some detail about what the allegations by these whistleblowers actually are. No, it just dismisses them as Russia and its allies have said that this wasn't a chemical weapons attack. And it says there's a couple of people in the OPCW who have been trying to blow the whistle. But the OPCW says they're full of it. And that's the extent of their reporting.
It's fake news award. You know, one thing.
The worst part is that is literally the only article I know that has even addressed this in the mainstream world. That's the only one I saw, at least up until recently, because there was the security.
You know, you mentioned white helmets and so on. And I seem to recall that they, correct me if I'm wrong, you probably know. The white helmet rescue, we got a bunch of people there because we're good guys and whatever. And it was started or promoted by an individual that used to be MI6. And then he winds up being dead. You know, he got there and he's done.
Military intelligence, yeah.
So, yeah, he died or in mysterious circumstances or something, too. What was that about?
What's his name? James Lemazurier. Yes, I did cover him in my episode on the White Helmets. White Helmets are a propaganda construct, episode 330 of the Quorum Report. So people can go and find out more about the actual founding of this group in Turkey, essentially, by ex-British military intelligence officer who is then doing the contract work for the US and UK governments. And he comes up with this organization, this White Helmets organization that's going to be helping people out, that is presented as if it's a grassroots, authentic, independent Syrian organization. No, yeah. It was started by a British military intelligence officer in Turkey. So anyway.
There's so many.
That's not even conspiracy theory. That's on the record.
Yeah, there's so many avenues of this. It was just, it's like it's obvious. It's all the other foreign governments, media, news channel, they know they're being played. There, but there's who breaks the story of real. It's always alternative media and James Corbett. I mean, you know, I'm wondering. Yeah. I'm wondering. The future is all about credibility, especially in news media and governments and what they say and don't and whatever. And I don't give a crap what they say. I don't believe them anyway. So I'm wondering to what end, what purpose this was done to justify any and everything they can. So we can missile Assad or something. What is the justification, the long-term game that they're playing?
Well, actually, can I just detour off what you just said?
Please.
You said something important. The future is all about credibility. Yeah, I agree. The future is all about algorithmic credibility. Because
what?
It doesn't matter what human beings think about it. It's, will the algorithm detect this as fake or real? That's where things are really trending. But, okay, why do they want Assad? They've been going after Assad since 2006. It's a good question because he was cooperating in the war of terror with the Bush regime.
Didn't we have Black Sites rendition something with Syria? What was up with that?
He was cooperating. He was torturing people that they wanted him to torture and everything. So he was playing along.
Wow! Wow!
When your use is up as a patsy, you just get thrown to the wayside, as patsies tend to find out. So, since we know that since actually the wake of 9/11, where what's his name, seven countries in 5 years,
got Gates,
which general?
Nah. Yeah,
anyway, the general that said saw the plans, seven countries in 5 years. Yeah, that's it. Was the part. And Syria was on that list. It's been on there for a while. Syria is on the doorstep of Israel. Do you think Israel has an interest in destabilizing Syria? Yes, they do. In fact, they've been on the record about it for decades. You can go back to, say, the Oded Yunon plan from the early 1980s, talking about destabilizing Syria as a way of keeping them from caring about Israel, essentially. Keep them off our doorstep. Also, the plans for the greater Middle East, the greater Israel plan that's been on the books for decades, also includes taking Syrian territory.
Okay. Let's talk about that real quick. Here Trump just came out with his Israel two-state plan of Palestine, of whatever it is. And I was kind of surprised that, because it's always been, you know, and any, you scratch the surface on any of the Israeli plans, is, yeah, we're going from the Mediterranean to the Tigris, Euphrates, and as far north and south as whatever it says in this here document, Torah something. That's our deed or whatever. So they're, yep, we're gonna get some, and it's all ours. Well, I'm going, all right, for Trump to come out with the borders of Israel the way it is now and split it up, and here's some, you know, land here, and here's, and it looked like, if you drill down in on it, it looks like an archipelago, man. I mean, it's just all these little separate things. He's even got a tunnel from, you know, Gaza to the West Bank or something like that. And it was comprehensive. If you look at it, I mean, I didn't read the whole thing, but I kind of scanned through it and look at the maps. I'm going, all right, does this have support from Israel, and then what Palestinians on the other side are we going to make them, or they're going, we tried, but we couldn't do it, so we nuked them or something? What is the plan here, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to me to be what this is more in line with, because from what I've seen, I haven't done the deep dive on this yet, but from what I've seen, the Palestinians pretty much immediately said, we had nothing to do with the drafting of this. We don't approve of this. We're not on board for this deal of the century, and immediately rejected it. Clearly, Trump and Kushner and whoever's really pulling the strings in that administration knew that this was not something the Palestinians were on board with. So why did they unveil it like this? I think it's just the, hey, look, we tried to give them something, but they said no. So, well, so a fair game now. I mean, they're just going to take Jerusalem, essentially.
Well, do you think that they, what if they did? You know, if some Palestinian, you know, I don't know who Palestinian without Yasser Arafat or somebody else that, you know, the claim token guy or whatever, I don't know who'd say yes. You know, I don't know who's going to say no. You know, a bunch of people say no, yes, whatever. But if they put this plan out, what would happen if the Palestinian rep of whoever that is, they won, you know, Palestinians Got Talent contest or something, and they say, yes, we're for it. We're absolutely, this is a great idea. Thank you. Let's do it. And they go, damn it. I hate when they do that. You know, do they really want this to be accepted or no?
No, it would be undermined. At the very least, it would be accepted and then amended and amended and amended. Oh, well, we'll take a little bit more here and a little bit. I mean, no one expects that anyone at this table is being honest brokers. But yeah, I mean, just look, I haven't done the deep dive on this, as I say, but up at Mondo Weiss, they have the deal of the century is apartheid posted up, which people should give to read through, just so that they get the kind of scope of what's going on here. But this is a ploy, I think, to at least show the world, hey, we're trying to do something, but they won't take it, those silly Palestinians. I think that's what this is about, because they knew they were going to reject it before.
It was amazing. This is not anywhere near any map I've ever seen of anything that Israel has publicly said that they wanted. If they get locked into this, you know, then I'm like going, okay, we'll see how this. I'm like, you know, am I allowed not to care? I mean, you know, I just, you know, let. Why are we even? I don't even have an opinion. You know,
Why is the U.S. the broker of this?
Right. I'm. Why let somebody? You know, it's like Putin took over the Syria thing. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. He takes care of it. It's taken care of. I'm like, well, you can do this one too. I don't care. You know, but there's some. What's going on? And I don't think that our involvement's going to make it better anyway. And I'm wondering what's going on in Israel's election. Netanyahu's got his own problems, and Trump and Netanyahu have linked their careers together. If Trump were not to win, I don't know what the hell would happen, but they're going to try. So let's talk about that. The 2020 election cycle seems like, you know, I try not to pay attention. I know more about it than I want to. You know, here comes Hillary. I think we've been saying for a long time Hillary is going to run, and it's going to be a, you know, broker convention super delegate of We Hate Bernie or something. And, you know, I don't know how. I what do you think from your perspective over there, this presidential race, what's going on?
What are we talking about? Do I care? I don't care.
All right. I'll leave it at that. Because thank you.
Go watch my interview with Larkin.
I was obliged to ask, you know, but, yeah, you know.
I get it. You're doing your job.
CIA Propaganda Network. Skip to the end on that one.
This is an article that I can't remember how it came up, but I was researching something and I came across this article from the New York Times from the late 1970s that was talking about the CIA's global propaganda network. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I started reading through it and it was a fairly thorough report. Obviously a limited hangout, because bizarrely enough, it starts by saying that the CIA had this network of over 800 different journalists and publishers and editors and publishing houses and magazines and radio stations and all around the world. But it wasn't being used to spread global propaganda. And then they go on to detail how it was being used to spread propaganda. So it was just, you know, it's one of those.
Define global. No, it's like define global. You know, what the definition of the word is. I mean, you know, it's like this kind of crap.
Yeah, exactly. But there was a lot of good information in there anyway. It was interesting. So I just did a video going through some of the key points of that and detailing it. But I mean, this just lines up with what we already knew from Carl Bernstein, CIA and the media and that report and what came out about Mockingbird and what have you in the church committee hearings. So it just lined up with
that. Was Bernstein that broke a lot of that stuff?
Yeah,
you know, Watergate guy, you know,
and the media, Rolling Stone, 1970.
All right, Russia, I'm really interested in your view on what happened. I read a couple of articles. I get it. It's, you know, because Putin can and I'm in charge forever and get over it. But all of a sudden, the entire Russian government, it's like they, and we resigned and we started over and we pushed a button, reset, flipped it, hit the, you know, I got a new life button on my game, something. How would you describe what happened?
Well, I would start by saying that I am not a Russia expert, and I don't know the ins and outs of domestic, you know, politics and this cabinet minister kind of thing. So I don't know it on that level. But I read a lot of different takes from a lot of different people, including an interesting New York Times article that was basically just saying, well, all the Russia experts are just saying all sorts of different things, and no one knows what's going on. And that was basically the whole article. It's like, okay, thanks, New York Times. So I've read a lot of different takes on it. The one that makes most sense to me is the one put forward by Gilbert Doctorow. He's been published in a few articles on antiwar.com that I would direct people to. And his take is essentially that this is Putin trying to shape the nature of the presidency and what the Russian Federation will be going forward. This is his legacy, is to shape the sort of the constitutional powers and what the president will look like. Not because Putin's going to stay in power and try to continue, you know, in 2024 and beyond. He's already pushing 70 or whatever it is. But this is him basically, and essentially different people have a different take on exactly why this is happening. There are the people that are saying that this is because Putin's a once in a 100-year kind of political phenomenon and no one will be able to fill his shoes. So he has to make it so that the presidency will be more sort of whittled down so that no one can. And then there's the other people saying he's defending Russia against infiltration by the West because they're going to try to get one of their puppets in as the next president. So he wants to preempt this and sort of stop them from putting that in place. There are other people saying that this is a preemptive coup attempt or a preemptive coup counter move because the coup plotters were planning to get him, so he's trying to do I don't know the ins and outs of that.
Well,
all I know is this is putting some constraints on the president's powers.
Well, in the end, it was like, you had all this power from the president, and there's a term limit, and at the end result of this is that it's brought back into the legislature, and there's like a prime minister thing or something that he's going to take that position. You know, and I think he had that before he became president or something.
Yeah. That's what he did last time. So he was president for two terms. You can't be president for three consecutive terms. So he went to prime minister when Medvedev took over the presidency, and then he came back in after that. I don't think that's what's happening this time. I could be proven wrong, but I don't think he's going back into prime minister role. We'll see. What do I know, essentially? At any rate, the handcuffs are coming on the presidency to a certain extent. But even then, as some people noted, and I'm just working with the English translation of his speech, but I actually did read his speech. But if you read the speech, there is that line that talks about there are people who are calling for us to re-examine the constitutional clause that limits the presidency to two consecutive terms. And he said something like, I can't remember the way he says it, but something like, you know, this isn't the place to talk about this, but I agree with that or something. And even that, like in the translation, there are different people who translated that sentence differently. And it could either mean that he agrees with the people who are calling for the reinvestigation, like should we hold a referendum on this and get rid of that term limit? Or is he agreeing that that term limit is good? Like it was so ambiguous that it could actually mean the exact opposite thing. So there's a lot of ambiguity here. And then the follow-up is that what was presented as some of the actual legislative bills that will go into making these reforms differed from what Putin was saying in his speech. So there's layers to this, and clearly something is happening on that level.
Was there any preordained knowledge of this or something? I'm wondering, it seemed like it just surprised. There was no prior knowledge of it at all. Yeah. It just happened.
Yeah.
It was one of those, boom.
This is the thing everyone can agree on. No one was expecting this.
You know, that's one thing that, you know, you got to give, you know, street cred for that. And it might have been, you know, they're doing regime change. And if they want to get regime change in Russia, I bet they're working. Yeah, we're doing a little color revolution with it. You know, this happened in Georgia. You know, I mean, it was, you know, they've done this like they haven't tried it before.
They've tried it during elections in Russia before.
Well, this is I'm not feeling clean, or that they're draining the swamp or any of this. So then here we got John Bolton comes out with a book, of course. So here he's going to say, he did too, Ukraine or whatever. Then I just get news today that the White House banned the publishing or the distribution of the book. You know, well, it has, you know, state secrets in there or something or whatever. And I'm going, do you know anything about what's going on there?
Me? Oh, yeah. No, I certainly don't have any of the details or the inner sanctum on that. But
banning the book.
I wonder if the White House would be able to do that. At any rate, this is the game. It's for who will occupy the Oval Office. And it's a fascinating game. It keeps people extremely engaged. Dr. Frank will no doubt have lots to say to you.
Yeah.
And I will listen to a little bit of it and then tune it out.
Yeah, right.
On the functioning of the American empire, which proceeds regardless of who is in that Oval Office.
You know, one thing you did I want to talk briefly on Smedley Butler. When you did that, it reminded me of a MP3 that we added to the story to your link on Smedley Butler, and we put it in there. And what it is War is a Racket. Presentation that he would give when he was traveling the country. I like you give some of the history of him. That was read by Glenn Jacobs. Glenn Jacobs is, you know, Kane, the worldwide wrestler, you know, big 7-foot guy, whatever. He's now mayor of, I guess they have county mayors in Tennessee. He's mayor of Knox County in Tennessee now. And I just talked to him like Christmas Eve or something. He called, you know, yo, what's up, and Christmas and everything. And because I've been bugging him, hey, man, give me a call, you know. And so we talked for quite a while. And his whole thing is just, man, electoral politics, wow. You know, I mean, he you know, I mean, sharing his quotes, but damn, this stuff is messed up. But the he read that War is a Racket by Smedley Butler, which I put it, he did a fantastic job. And it was, you know, let me tell you how bad it is. And just, and he was motivated years ago to do that because he's like, look, man, this guy knew. You know, go ahead and give his bona fides to the audience who Smedley Butler was.
So Smedley Butler was, at the time of his death, the most decorated Marine in the history of the U.S. Marine Corps. He has, I think, at least been matched on some of his records by this point. But if you go to his wiki entry, you'll get at least the bare bones of his accomplishments, however many medals of honor and brevet awards.
Yeah, he was a Marine, 2 congressional medals of honor. He was, you know, the greatest, most loved, and had, he was the Soleimani that didn't want to get, they don't want him droned.
Yeah,
you know?
Actually, that's a good reference because, yeah, this is a general who, I don't know if he was loved by the American public. I don't know how much the American public knew about him, but he was definitely a well-respected military officer who had definitely done a lot of work for the U.S. military. And so it was after that point that he had a change of heart. And I don't know the whole story of the conversion of Butler to being the repentant, what the hell did I do?
The only thing that I really remember that had a big impact on him was, one, he saw it was a racket. They were just spending money and wasting, and they didn't care about the troops and the wars were all. And the main thing, one of the quotes that he was attributed to him was that he was just the muscle for American corporations. Now, this is just, you know, America and her interest. Well, he was saying, I've seen this her interest thing, and I'm out there being the thug for this, and people dying for some, you know, empire, and I, hell no. So what really got him to the fore, as I remember, was there was some kind of, like, Putin, that's what made me kind of think the two going together here, is that Putin probably feared some kind of a plot or overthrow or coup or their regime change or something. Well, they had, there was the deep state or whatever it was, had gone to General Butler and said, look, man, we got to get rid of this FDR guy. You know, this is just, and there was a planned coup that they wanted him to support or be part of, and he outed them. He said, whoa, 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 whoa. This is not that he was a big supporter of FDR, and he thought it was like, you know, like QAnon thinking they were going to, thought better of doing a coup on Obama, so we're gonna get Trump in there and help him, and that's the narrative that they want to have. So Smedley Butler was got all ornery about it and starting to come out and writing a book and doing the, you know, train tour around the United States, you know, in the atmosphere of them trying to get him to support a coup against FDR. You know, yep. That's about all I remember.
Yeah, I agree. I think the business plot, and people can look that up under that name. That was what he exposed there with the people who were plotting the overthrow of the presidency and institution of fascism in America. And the bonus army, he was also leading the bonus army. Remember, the World War Adjusted Compensation Act of 1924 had promised World War One veterans basically inflation-adjusted cash payments of service certificates, and the U.S. government was dragging its heels on that and basically putting the veterans through the hamster wheel on that one. So,
well, they actually went to the White House long, camped out. That was a big deal. And wasn't it MacArthur that went in and kicked them out or plowed them over or something?
Yes, I think you're right. Yep. So in 1932, there was 43,000 marchers that marched in Washington, 17,000 World War One veterans. And Butler did address the crowd. He was there. He was leading the bonus army. And you're right. On July 28th, MacArthur came in, dispersed the bonus army by riding through it and using gas. During the conflict, several veterans were killed or injured, and Butler declared himself a Hoover for ex-president Republican. So, you know, things like that might tend to change your view on what the American military was all about and what it was really doing and how much the government really cared about you. And so he went around giving this speech, Wars of Racket, which you mentioned there. I hope people will look it up if they haven't heard of it yet, because it's an important story.
Well, what was that? You know, is that pretty much all those points are the ones that you made? Because I didn't get to watch the video. How long was it? Yeah. What were you focusing on?
It was just like 8 minutes or something. Just basically to introduce Butler to people and point him. Because I did a podcast episode on him, so people can look in that if they're more interested in the bigger story. But yeah, essentially just to say, hey, there was this highly decorated, highly respected Marine who became one of the most strident anti-war voices you ever heard. And he wasn't some long-haired hippie. I mean, this was a guy who definitely had done his military service. And he recognized what a racket war is. And it's not for the benefit of the people. It's not for the benefit of the soldiers. It isn't even necessarily for the benefit for the politician puppets. It's they're string pullers who ultimately benefit from this, and the millionaires and billionaires who are minted from these wars.
I want to get behind, before we leave behind the paywall, because we're going through a bunch of this stuff. I'm sure you can help us out and, you know, share your knowledge. But Rock the Vote, I haven't watched that yet. What's that about? You're going Rock the Vote again? What's up?
Yeah, this is my preemptive warning about the 2020 propaganda people are about to be subjected to. The most important election of our life.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, 2020 is the freaking year. I don't care. You know, I don't care about the elect. That don't mean nothing. But I'm like, this is, I don't think they're going to kick the can much further down the road on this one. This is different, you know, of my whole life on this.
And they very much could pull the plug on the economy if they want to try to influence the election that way.
So what were you saying? Rock the Vote, just, you know, here comes the propaganda?
So it starts with the utilitarian argument for why voting is useless, essentially, and goes through the voting machines are rigged and all of that kind of stuff. Then it gets into the deeper point. Well, actually, I mean, even if they did count your vote, which they don't, but even if they did, it doesn't really matter because you are giving the choice between Crest and Colgate and told that that is the spectrum of your input into this process. And it changes nothing about the nature of the American empire. But then I get into the actual deeper underlying point at the end with a clip from an old Larkin Rose interview I had talking about how voting is not just that it's useless. It's that it is immoral. Even if you were voting for good instead of evil, even if your vote actually did count, voting itself is immoral, and the idea of instituting an authority over the country is itself immoral. And that's the deeper level that no one even wants to hear. Like, it doesn't even penetrate people's ears to hear about the immorality of voting and the immorality of the system as it exists. Because you'll notice, even in the comment section on that video on corporatereport.com, the commenters are all talking about, well, yeah, but voting is useful if we can do this, and if the public has the right, and not a single person has even noticed that deeper and much more underlying point. No, voting isn't bad because it's our vote doesn't count. It's bad because even if your vote counts, you are trying to use violence, the state-imposed violence, to impose your will on other people. That is immoral. That is immoral, no matter how you cut it. And no one wants to even address that.
You know, I'm gonna throw a monkey wrench into your, you know, here we go. It's coming to Hawaii. So we're getting closer to you. This is what's going on. Good friend, Mark J. Vicker, attorney for Freedom at Law. All right. He wrote an article on Lou Rockwell a couple of months ago about, you know, reasonable gun control or something. Really what he was promoting is the LLLP, the live and let live principle, the 3LP, okay, which is non-aggression principle. And he starts the movement that he's doing. And he just got passed the bar in Hawaii. So he's going to be splitting his time between Arizona and Honolulu, where he's opening a law office there. He and his new wife are going to be, you know, spending a lot of time in Hawaii. Now, she's from Indonesia, Bali. She was the daughter of a diplomat, I think, and she's a cardiologist. So she's, you know, got skills. You know, this is an educated woman. Now, what he's doing is he just thinks all these crazy bat crap, crazy hardcore anarchist libertarians like Lark and Rose and Ernie and whatever is that you guys are just, you're crazy, man, you're crazy, because this is the libertarianism comes with such baggage. So when he was at the this last Saturday, Davi and Tim Pachote and I went down to the convention. Pachote and I are both Arizona delegates going to Austin. I'll have the love bus there and we'll have some fun. Now the main thing that Mark was saying is going, yeah, see, all taxation is theft, Berman wearing his hat and, you know, Berman Supreme with his boot. And you guys, you know, you're just part of the crazy. Don't be crazy. You know, here's a guy. Yeah. Like Adam, he can wear a tie. I mean, you know, Bumper, he looks good and we're going to do it reasonably. Well, he wants to abandon, you know, this, all this baggage and still use the philosophy and so on, but voting, and he's going to try and do this. Now, Ken Schulin is a professor there in Honolulu. Now, when we went to Hawaii last May, you know, I hooked up a lot of these guys. Yo, what's up? We spent a lot of time on the 10 days traveling the island, Oahu and so on, kind of got an beat on it. There was a bunch of homeless camp shelters on the side of the road and got all those kind of same things going on in California. So his thing is he's going to go there. And he announced on a radio program there, he's opening the office, that he's going to run for U.S. Senate in Hawaii with this philosophy. I'm going, yeah, if you lean libertarian even a little bit, you're going to be whacked out crazy, you know, in Hawaii anyway. So whatever, you know. So he's a good friend. I'll help you. You know, like, what I want you to do, Ernie, is renounce all the whatever and join the, you know, something. I go, nah, that's probably not going to happen. But, you know, we're good friends. Of course I'm going to help you. You pick the week or two or whatever you want me to come in and make sure there be Mark. I'm their there be Mark guy. Made you look. Okay, I'm the make you look guy. So I go, not a problem. We'll do this. It's going to be a really good experiment, you know, on if this voting kind of kinder, gentler, not so crazy, don't scare the horses kind of thing is going to work. And we're getting close to Japan.
That has never been tried before.
Right? I know. But, you know, it's always you didn't do it right. If you did it the right way, you know. So I'm supportive, and a lot of people are supportive of it. And he gave, you know, he kind of toned it down after, you know, our conversation, me pounding on him, you know, for weeks. But, you know, when he gave the presentation Saturday, it went over well. I mean, you know, the people were like, oh, okay, you know, that's kind of all right. So I'm interested in seeing that. So you'll when that comes, and it'll be within a year, two, three, as he develops and we have some fun, do some activism in Hawaii. I don't think the bus is going to make it. But, you know, if we go over there and we have some fun, hopefully you'll notice. We'll see what happens. It's an experiment.
All right, cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, whatever, man. I support him trying. And of course I'm going to help my friend, and it'll be, and I'll give him the best chance ever, and I'll try and make it work and do and whatever. But I know what happens. You know, it's politics. You know, it gets into. I don't think it's going to go especially as well Hawaii. As I think. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Especially Hawaii. My sense is that is not the most.
I don't know. I'm well. You know, that brings us to Tulsi Gabbard. Are you paying any attention to that?
You mean ex-CFR member / we need a war on terror, Tulsi Gabbard? Yeah, I know her. What she's marketed as. And, also she's a socialist who wants a Green Deal. And all.
Oh, yeah, no, man, definitely socialist. But, you know, she's, of all the Democrats, I can't think of anyone else they should. That's why Hillary comes out. The machine is definitely not Tulsi Gabbard.
They are not worried about Tulsi.
They're not worried about her now. I mean, they definitely don't want to help.
They're worried about Bernie at this point, and Bernie's, we know he's going to play the game. But all of this is garbage. You're trying to get me into this garbage.
No, I don't want to. You don't want to talk about it. Okay. All right. I'll bail you out here. All right. What's behind the paywall? Questions for Corbett. Tell me what that was about and what we can learn from it.
Yeah, a listener has sent in an email to say, so why have you got content up behind your paywall? Is it to try to escape the coming crackdown, the internet crackdown or something? Well, and my simple answer is there's nothing behind the paywall, because there isn't. Everything I do is up for free. Even my subscriber newsletter, I put up the free editorial. There's a link there for you to click on if you don't want to subscribe. So my answer is there's absolutely nothing that I do that's behind the paywall. And it's funny, when I try to explain this to people, I don't know if it's a generation gap or what, but there's a certain segment of the population that cannot wrap their heads around this idea. Do you have subscribers to your site? What do they get? Well, there's a newsletter, but they don't have to subscribe for it. What? Wait, you sell DVDs? But you said you put your documentary up for free. Oh, you put a little teaser of your documentary up for free, and then you get people to buy. No, I put the whole documentary up for free, and if people want, they can buy a DVD.
Yeah, you know, the thing is behind that, we did the same thing years ago when we were doing the magazine, and we did a subscription thing for it, and you get the magazine and so on. And the biggest complaint I got is the people that subscribed were upset that it wasn't available to everyone. Their support of me and the subscription was so it would be available to everyone. They're like, we're going to pull a subscription if you don't make it available to everyone. I'm like, oh, right. I mean, I got the right audience base, you know? So
exactly
it's...
Right. Yeah. So I always say to people who are like, what do I get for this? If that's your question, then please don't subscribe. your motivation should be, if you like the work that I do and you want it to be available to the world, please support me. I cannot do it without that. But if you're looking for special secret insider information, sorry, that's not how this works.
Okay, I wanted to show you... one thing, can I give you some props here and what's up? Okay, on the site, you go to the site. Now, what Derek has been, we've instilled, man, we're making progress constantly on IPFS, Aaron Planetary File Sharing. Now, what's going on is that we have, when you go to the bottom of site, what's up, man? Let's go. When you go to any article that's over 2 days old, he set it at 48 hours. He's like, you know, at 48 hours, we're going to, you know, do whatever. So I'm going, all right, at 48 hours, it goes through and it pulls all the old articles and puts them into IPFS and also strips them of all the embeds. So when you go to any of these articles, let's go to the last one, make sure it's more than 2 days old. When you go into these older articles, what happens is that IPFS makes a copy of whatever you do. And if you change it, it just makes another copy of whatever you do, you know? So he waits, he goes, I'll wait a couple of days. I go, make it 24 hours. After a day, I'm usually not messing with it. So this right here, the IPFS, now the entire site of anything over 2 days, boom, goes to IPFS. And it's coming up pretty quick. Okay, so this will load up, but the also the Corbett report is loading up pretty quick too. So I'm going, all right, we go up in here to any of the we'll go into, where is it, Corbett, right there, boom. So at the bottom of each of my shows, you'll see that we put these here. There's all the Corbett stuff in the pins. Let's see how fast it is. Boom. Come on, man. Give me what for now. It's going. Oh, whenever I want to show you, man, it always goes slow. But the this is, we're working on this now. When we take this bus trip and everything, I know they're going to be going after everything. You know, it's like, oh, hell no. You're definitely not allowed to talk about vaccines, you know. So when I had Kingsley Edwards on from Float, which is one of the social medias here, and over the years that we've talked and met and so on, they want to, you know, be uncensored and you're not allowed to stop us and we got and whatever. So I'm going, okay, you know, but a couple of things that I wanted. If we promote one particular social media over another, and it's like, oh, they got 10,000 people over there now or something, and I'm going, I don't even care how many, you know. We'll, you know, Levolution will take care of that, man. It'll be, whatever they find a place, man, it's going to go stupid. So where do we focus our attention on? The one thing that I wanted is the email. Do you get the email dispatch, you know, that we do, the newsletter? That newsletter is an interactive PDF. If we could, instead of entering each one of those like 70 a day articles, you know, that we put in, I like to just scan it and I'll pick whatever I want because we got a wide range of stuff. So if I put those all on like Facebook, I'd be like, whoa, make it stop, man. Holy crap, you know. But if I do one PDF, interactive PDF like that, I just take that dispatch and it just goes up in the column, I'm good. Let me do that a couple of times a day, and they are now hosting video. So they're doing certain amount. I go, all right, because BitChute takes for freaking ever. DTube takes for freaking ever. And it's all, and it's just, you know, GooTube is all about, we got more servers than you need us because we're faster. And my wife is, Donna's like, oh, she's, oh, man, you know, tell Derek somebody, you know, somebody should be slapped and how much is it, I can't stand it. So what you do is you put it on YouTube and then you have scripts that take automatically and put it on the other stuff, right?
No.
How do you do it?
BitChute has a function that they have to mirror your YouTube uploads. And so I don't mess with that. They do that automatically. Minds.com, I upload individually each and every one. I used to upload each and every video to DTube individually as well, but I haven't been able to upload to DTube for a couple months now. I don't know what's going on, and I haven't bothered to troubleshoot it. So I think maybe two, maybe three people ever watched my uploads on DTube anyway. So I'll just upload to Minds.
The reason we liked DTube was because it was IPFS, and it, you know, helped propagate through the, what now we just have our own servers, you know, in another country that it just takes it automatically from our site. And we had the scripts, and we did like 15,000 of videos of all the guys, including you and everything. So we, you know, we've been working on this, making sure we save this stuff for, you know, from they, them, those, and their plans. And so, well, this one's loaded up. You know, we have, you see the IPFS address up here. So it just takes it and it duplicates it, and it takes all the video out of there, scrapes it, and puts it in. It's IPFS. Okay. So that's what this, and these are, you know, a big hash thing and so on. So this one is.
Well, here's my thought on this. So if the point of this is to make the backup for, you know, the inevitable crackdown and whatever, I mean, if you can make it to this page to get the IPFS link, then you don't need the IPFS link. I mean, you need it as a backup, but how do you get to that? I mean, what we really need is IPFS search. That's what it's going
yes.
to be. Once you're, you know, once they see freedomsphoenix.com, once they see that domain, no one's going to be able to get to the link to get to the IPFS.
Yeah, this is what we're working on. I want to, and I'm going, when I go back to New England tomorrow, there's at Liberty Forum and the Alt Expo and a bunch of the guys there. This is the conversation that, you know, we're prepping to have. And what we were thinking about with something like Library, Jeremy Kaufman, I want to, you know, kind of get with him, but I don't know where they are now. It's not, you know, everybody's in different phases of monetary kind of and social and their personal life and, you know, the election cycle and who's paying and you can and can't. And they get the letter from the takedown if you're not an influence of it. All this crap enters into this stuff. So as an older guy, you know, I take time and I, this is what I want. And I talk to Minds, you know, Bill Ottman over at Minds and Jeremy Kaufman at Library and Kingsley Edwards at Float. And I'm like, who's where and what in this? Because a lot of factors, what's the attack vector on them? You know, they, and Library is a, I think Delaware Corporation with a brick and mortar in Manchester. And when the man shows up with a takedown order of whatever, it's yes and boss. Now, with Library, it's data that's kind of noted, you know, like, you know, an IPFS or Made Safe or Filecoin or something. It kind of uses that mechanism, but it has the front index, the wall, the search engine thing like you're talking about. Well, that's where they got Kim.com, is that they go, yeah, you got all the, yeah, mega upload. We got everything up here and screw you and there's nothing you can do about it. And they go, yeah, well, you got a listing of where it is, kind of boom. So they go after him. Well, if they do that to Library and Jeremy gets a thing, well, he'll take it off and it's not on the search engine anymore. But the people that run the nodes, like the IPFS, it's still out there. So my offer and what I was thinking, and then that's what we're talking about and with Float and so on, is I go, if there was an IPFS master index of all of the, like the stuff that we have, we would add that to that IPFS master search file. That's over, it's separate. It's everybody's got it. It's like a blockchain that keeps getting added. So that's your master search right there. So I'm going, that, in my opinion, is the Holy Grail. If you can get a search for IPFS that is IPFS blockchained, untouchable, of kind of, it's all there, boom, we're off.
Of a decentralized end.
Well, I'm going to advocate for this. I'm working on it, and I'm going to say James Corbett said. You know, James Corbett said we need to do this.
I put my name on that. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
IPFS search.
All right, so yeah. You know, James Corbett and I are both on board for IPFS search, and kind of, you know, and that's the Holy Grail of which I guarantee is a coming, because as we're working on it, the reason that we advocate for this and we show a use case for it and we keep going, you know, step by step by step, is hopefully encouraging people to do it, that we can show a use case for it, that we're demonstrating that can be done. But what happens if you wait too long? We're done. We did it. And that's why when I had the conversation with Float, I go, you guys better come up with a solution, because we're this close from being our own social media. If you guys just suck it, okay? We're just going to do it ourselves. When I said that, Kingsley goes, how many times do you say suck it a day? I go, a lot. I mean, I'm so sick of waiting on everybody. So we're on the same page here, and I think we understand, and that's why I'm so encouraged to talk to you and promote what you're doing and make sure your stuff gets saved, because I know you understand. You've been, you know, doing this for a long time. You're one of the first guys that and it's only now. I mean, since certainly when they started deplatforming everybody a year ago, it was like a year ago, you know, about exactly a year ago, that they just, boom, all of a sudden, you know, Ernie's not crazy anymore. But the thing is now they're seeing, man, it is systematic, it is overt, it is covert, it is everywhere. And we haven't even got to the Super Bowl time of the 2020 election cycle yet. So this is coming.
You know what, Ernie? Thank you for restoring my faith and energy, because I got to admit, the last article I read before we started this conversation was an article about how the U.S. House of We Own You, Senator I Rule You, came out with this letter to Google saying, you know, we want you to censor climate misinformation and add it to your, what's that category they have, the
dangerous
boundary cases or whatever they're legalese for. Yeah, it's not technically against our terms of use, but we're going to limit you anyway, and we're going to censor you. And they're saying you have to add climate in this information to this, because millions of people are being directed to these scary climate information videos. Ah! Here I am thinking, yes, of course, and of course. And I'm thinking that there's times of light and enlightenment, and then there's dark ages, and we've just gone through a time of enlightenment, and we're going into a dark age, and there is a lockdown is happening. And all that means is the cool kids are going to go wherever.
It's exactly.
But it's just like, and so we do this fight again, and then they come over there, and we do this fight again.
Always.
And they come over there.
Until they can't. Yeah. I'm going to, so, because they can. Yeah. Until they can't, they're going to keep doing it.
Exactly.
It's that simple. You know, one thing, it was, we had Jane Orient on. She lives in Tucson. I know her pretty well. And she's head of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Now, they sued Hillary Clinton or the administration or something back in Bill Clinton's administration when they were trying to do universal health coverage or whatever. You know, that was because they were doing these secret meetings and everything. Well, now they just sued, and we were talking about Friday, I think, Schiff. What's his name? Adam Schiff? What's his name? I forgot. I'm so proud of myself.
Not Peter Schiff?
No. The congressman. You know, Adam Schiff. Okay, I am so happy that I wasn't sure about his name. Anyway, so Adam Schiff, he was sent these letters. I am Adam Schiff, congressional blah, 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 to Amazon and these different places. And that was the justification they would use to take some people down, because, you know, he said it. So, of course, they're suing him, going, what the hell do you? Well, I'm going, you know, they didn't have to take it down. I don't know what the heck their justification is for this stuff. So there is a conscious effort. Then I see another article that this one kind of scared me more than most. Big Pharma is using closed, sealed, terminated, finished lawsuits to get data in to create a temporary restraining order that is then being enforced through the bankruptcy court. It was just a, how do we get a judge, you know, to, you know, say temporary restraining order, then we get it enforced. So Big Pharma has been able to use a terminated previous lawsuit that's sealed so they can't know what they're doing. Then they give it to a bankruptcy court that then sends a letter to the social media, and that's how they've been getting them to take down stuff. You haven't heard this?
Crazy. No, send me a link on that.
No. It's Zero Hedge. I mean, you know, this is not like I'm making this crap up, you know? So I'll pull it up here in a second when you go on your monologue. Yeah. But the this can't hold. You know, it's just so stupid. And when you do that and you see how bad it really is, that's when I think, you know, people are moving over, and I'm just happy and supportive that they did it early enough that the people can see it going into the cycle. Now, one of the other things is, well, there's a lot of stuff, but I want to get this on the show. Let me go ahead and pull this up. Now, what do you think are going to be the big issues with China and the virus thing and so on? You guys are close there. Is Japan freaking out and everybody's wearing a water bottle on their head? Yeah, I've seen these big, like, 3-liter water bottles people just putting over their head, like Spaceman.
I didn't see that yet.
Oh, that's awesome.
Looking out my window, I'm not seeing it. So this is one of those things where what you see on TV is not necessarily reflective of your reality, and keep that in mind. How many people do you know with this virus? How many people do you know have died from this virus? I know zero. How about you? So anyway, I'm not freaking out about it till I see people with blood pouring out their nose. But Japan just declared it some sort of special whatever, put it on some special list so that they can give you free treatment, and and by the way, they can forcibly quarantine you if they want to.
No, they got quarantined. They jumped on this thing. They got, God, they have 5 million people, and they're building overnight a 1,000-bed hospital.
State, and we can crack down and put quarantine on millions of people in this megacity, and I think it's rolling out the apparatus for medical martial law, which I think is the real agenda here. Again, I don't think this is anything to freak out about. Health-wise, I am not scared about catching this thing. I am scared about the potential political abuses of this type of pandemic nonsense.
Pharma courts, vaccines. I'm trying to, you know, think of words to pull this up because
I got to get running. But you can send me that link off air.
It's a thing. You know, thanks for coming on. It's always good to check in with you. I'm glad we did it before I had to leave. But I just wanted you to know you're going to be hearing about, you know, Ernie and Donna and Merca, you know, during we're going to
be on next week, or are you going to be gone?
I don't know. What the hell am I? I will be back in New England, but I will let you know, and I'll try and get you on. I think, you know, wherever I'm doing it, and I'll take my stuff, and, you know, we'll do the show. And wherever I do the show, you know, there'll be a big crowd of freaking James Corbett. Woohoo! You know, so we'll have a party. So we'll see. I'll do my best to try and get you on. The James Corbett, thecorbettreport.com, you know, keeping us informed and sane. God, man, somebody's got to do it. I'm glad you're doing it. Peace, brother. Thanks, man.
All right. Take care, man.
Bye.